Welcome to the Humus Union of Madison. And thank you to those of you who suggested this program, an open forum program where we can all take turns. The idea was that while we as a group do not have any charitable projects, the suspicion is that we are involved as individuals in a great many different things. This is a chance to get to know each other better. So let's start at one place on the circle and go all the way around, talking about things that we devote our time to help others. Who wants to start?
I'll jump in.
Okay.
I helped with a Hungarian refugee in the 50s, which a church I was going to at the time helped sponsor. And that was kind of the beginning, I think, of... And it turns out to be that one of them ended up in Madison, which was Lajos Biros, whom some of you know. And I went to school in Colorado, so that's another story which I won't go into, but very interesting how we found out that each other was here. As a public school teacher, I taught, and a lot of mine, I think, is work-related. I taught in public schools where there were no guidance counselors, no psychologists. You know, the teachers did it all. And so in terms of, you know, helping people over rough times, there's been a lot of that in my life in one respect or another. So that was for quite a number of years. And then I ended up at the UW, and I believe I was the process the application for the first person from mainland China to come to UW. And obviously that was a group of people that really were in a very different situation, needed help. I mean, they weren't helpless people, it was just acculturation. That person is now a professor here at UW. And I didn't know that until recently, so that was kind of neat. And I was involved in a conversation group of some of the Chinese people, at first mostly men, who came over and ended up being given money from the government of China, not knowing what to do with it, and so they were keeping lots of lump sums of money in their apartments. And so I helped them establish with the credit union a setup where they didn't have to pay for checks. They could just go in and take money out, but they were still getting some interest. That's the kind of thing that I really enjoyed doing. I worked with the Cuban Marielitos, when they first came here, teaching English as a second language.
Marcia was a translator at Fort McCoy.
She was?
Marielitos, yeah.
Wow. Well, I would have had some of the same people then, I bet, that she worked with.
In the barracks.
Yeah. And then for a number of years at the university in various jobs, I worked in affirmative action, which was really, really enjoyable and heartwarming. And people that might not otherwise have gone to school have ended up in professions. And some of them because I hustled for money for scholarships for them. In more recent years, which you've probably heard a lot more of than you'd ever want to hear again, my son and I, as a team, were responsible for getting a young man out of the country he was in and into our family. And I'm not going to go into details on the air, but it was a 5.5-year process. And then at this time, $50 goes out of my account every month to help a young man in Haiti who's about 14 years old, who's going to a school that's sponsored by an evangelical organization. And you know, I know that this child is not going to be brought up a humanist. That doesn't matter a whole lot to me. This child is going to be fed, he's going to be educated, and he may have a chance in life that he wouldn't have had otherwise. So that's, I feel pretty good about that.
All our lives, marriage, we have determined that as two positions, we made a lot more money than we needed, and we didn't want to live in a rich lifestyle. So it's always been our policy to give away probably the majority of our income and select causes that might not otherwise be supported. And we continue to do that. But in terms of massage satisfaction from doing something personal, always running away money that got more than other people at the level in society got anyway. So, I considered my medical practice, although I was reimbursed for it and most of my patients paid, I felt that I was going beyond the particular sequences of the situation and participating in their lives. Which is one reason why I only practice part-time. It would be too emotionally draining to do that full time. I've been very active in the schools, especially in the last 10 years, being on the school board and participating in school programs. I guess I do a lot of well-wishing without doing as much acting as I like. Well, we did serve in the Peace Corps.
Where was that?
In Afghanistan, oh, 40 years ago.
Currently, most of my volunteer time is spent on internet-related things. I've created websites for allied partners, the Humanist Union of Madison, and also our Facebook and automatic tweets. Our Social Action Committee's website, and least, not least, the Raging Grannies of Madison website. And I think we'll hear more about them later. And also their Google group, which they use for communicating among themselves. Another website is the Solar Owner News, which is for people who are solar collectors of various types to share their stories, good or bad. The Voter Quota website, which is for people who want to share quotations from articles or books about candidates for office. I think other voters would find relevant.
What is that website, Bob?
Voter Quota. The number of pages related to the low-power radio station, citywide radio. There's a series of programs called Wider Horizons. One of them is Humanism Today, which we use our recordings for. Spirit in Action, Song of the Soul, is a series created by a Quaker in Eau Claire. Voices for Religious Pluralism is Wednesday programs. It sometimes uses programs recorded here in Prairie for speakers' part or from other congregations. Free Thought Radio is a rebroadcast of James Wellfield from Religion Foundation that they previously broadcast. My topics in evolutionary science is a Friday. And currently it's on Ask a Biologist, which is from Arizona State University. So most of these have people who can't hear them on the air because of the limited range of the station can go to the station's website and listen online to these talks one way or another. Also, there's Science for Skeptics, Friday Forum, which comes from the Madison Institute, Paige Miller is the founder of that, the Haven Center of the University, Forward Forum, which John Quinlan used to broadcast. Culture Shocks is 3 days a week. Barry Lynn is the head of the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and also has this radio program podcast. Progressive Radio, Matt Rothschild is editor of Progressive Magazine, has a weekly program that we broadcast. And Wisconsin Democracy Report, which is the emails of a variety of things related to, for instance, the demonstrations at the Capitol and the various meetings that were held in relation to that. There's a web page that provides links to a whole series of talks that have been broadcast. And there's some inactive websites I'll skip over because they're no longer being actively used. The Madison Area Coalition of Reason has a website, which I provide the content for, and the web administrator for that, or managing the publicity for that will be coming out towards the end of August. Help maintain the Prairie UU website and Facebook page. And as far as the radio station goes, I provide progressive talk programming of various sorts. And I select Skeptoid is a 15-minute weekly program debunking myths, science-oriented program looking at the sound science behind various myths. Counterspin from Fairness and Accuracy in Recording is getting behind the news and telling you what the New York Times and so on didn't cover, the other side of things. Media Minutes talks about media reform. Hightower Radio is a 2-minute daily program from Jim Hightower, his commentary. I also have a regular series of tweets I do for the radio station, for Democracy Now!, Culture Shock, Counterspin, Progressive Radio, and the Wisconsin Democracy Report. And other recent activities, Madison, the Coalition of Reason Organizing, this group's organizing and recording demonstrations at the Capitol, like the Elders March and the Raging Grannies Retreat, which I went to. That's a very worthwhile group that I support, and it's mostly through the internet. And just briefly mentioning some past activities. Not too long ago, we're installing a tower for the radio station in our garage roof. Years ago, I was a statewide coordinator for the Wisconsin, the Wisberg, Wisconsin Public Research Group Organizing Committee, the original organizing. And I was a volunteer for the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party the summer of 1965 in the Jackson area, when I went to jail for 10 days after parading without a permit. And I taught for a semester at Tougaloo College, Tougaloo, Mississippi. It's a predominantly black college in the Jackson area. That was in 67.
Mm-hmm. It would be an understatement to say that my list of volunteering is more modest. Years ago, I served in the Navy, volunteering to be on longer than I would have had to otherwise to enter as an officer. Over the years, I've done various work for my college, private college, interviewing students who were applying for that. 24 years writing the class correspondent column, keeping my classmates hopefully amused and interested. I decided that we had the cleverest class in the world, and to this day they have adopted that. That was easy enough to sell. I've worked as a volunteer in politics, most recent elections, circulating nominating petitions and doing incidental campaign work, in not necessarily partisan politics. I spent a fair amount of time at and around Capitol Square from mid-February through March. That wasn't entirely uncompensated. The pizza was really good. As an attorney, when people have approached me and asked for advice, since the problems that most people face rarely involve commercial documents for secured lending, which was the area in which I specialized, what I have done is tried to make sure that they were in the hands of an attorney that I knew, whose background and expertise was appropriate to the problem that was raised, or to let them understand that as bad as the problem may be, perhaps it wasn't one that the law was in a position to help them with. I've tried to be supportive of others who are doing volunteer work, but again, on a in a less formal and more sporadic level, certainly than Robert.
Well, we did volunteer work. Most of it was overseas, and most of it was for adventure, not necessarily for humanism. That's it. But I can tell you two things. A lot of volunteer stuff ended up badly. But I can tell you two things that Marcia did that ended up really well, and my part is I supported her in this. When we were in Coloma, she was tutoring a Mexican child, and the child's mother worked in a factory there, and there was a fight of some sort. And the cops came, and they didn't speak any Spanish. They just arrested everybody, and it sorted all out later. And so this woman got a fine of $350. And so Marcia took her to court twice up to Stevens Point, which is about 40 miles, and translated for her. And then finally, she just paid it. Marcia just gave her the $340 and paid it. Oh. And this woman just couldn't believe anybody did anything. Then they moved, and that woman paid back every penny of that. Oh. Never saw her again. Money orders came in until every penny was paid back.
Wow.
And I thought that was just fantastic.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And the other thing was, we were in India and on a building a school for untouchables. Actually, Marcia was training teachers and I was working on a construction. And this kind of went bad too. And these two young women who Marcia had been teaching lost their jobs. And one went to Hong Kong and the other one went to Abu Dhabi to work as sort of slaves for overseas Indians. And so Marcia sent each one of them a nice $20 bill every month. And eventually both those girls on their own wrote and said, "We don't need them anymore." And I thought they could have just not said anything and they could have kept them coming. And they didn't. They both individually said, "Fine, thank you very much, we're okay now." And I thought those were some really great experiences. And now we work down at the Allied Drive food pantry. That's once a week. That's not much.
You've done prison volunteering, too.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. I tutored at the prison for about 5 years. I went about two afternoons a week and taught GED at the federal prison in Oxford. That was a good experience. I enjoyed that a lot. But a lot of it, like I said, I did because I liked to do it, and it was adventurous. And the fact that it was humanistic, that's pretty much secondary. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have done it if I didn't like it.
Well, I think that's true of anything.
Yeah. That's true of all of us.
And I found trying to find volunteer work in Madison that, you know, I had to make a rule. I say, I would like to work in addition to the people who were there, not in lieu of the people who were there. Mm-hmm. And I found, Port St. Angeles, do you know where that is? Port St. Vincent. Uh-huh. By St. I started volunteering there. And so I ended up washing dishes and everything. Pretty soon the guys who were supposed to be washing dishes were sitting out on the patio smoking.
Oh!
And I was doing all the work. And I'm not here to do that. I'm here to add.
Yeah.
And add, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
What countries were you in the Peace Corps in?
In the Peace Corps, we were in Paraguay. And then we went back for 3 months on a flood relief thing in Paraguay. And then we went to India to work on that school. Then we went to Chiapas, Mexico, and worked on a guest ranch down there. But before that, I worked overseas as an engineer, and we lived in Bangladesh, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, Argentina, Canada.
Wow.
So all those odd places.
Odd.
That was 18 years. That took 18 years to do all that. So
I have a bit of a hard time coming up with something. I just feel that I've been a humanist as long as I can remember, and partly thanks to my parents, even though I was brought up Lutheran, it was just a formal thing. But my parents and my grandparents, no doubt, absolutely without a doubt, instilled in me very humanist values, and I've always had to struggle a lot after I came to this country, and don't have that much money, but ever since I've had a 50% American Indian granddaughter, I've gotten into contributing as much as I could afford to Indian Relief Council and things like that. And in part, I think, in an indirect and non-organized way, I have had some influence in the form of consciousness raising. I have been a teacher for over 40 years, and I have always felt that the most important thing was to do consciousness raising to young people. I taught high school, then I taught beginning college, and then later university. And I never gave it much thought, but I have also, I think I've taught what I wanted to teach to these young people by example. And when you are consciously trying to teach critical thinking and oppositional values when they are proper and necessary, you're fulfilling a humanistic function. The only real organization I've been in now for quite some time is the Raging Grannies, and I'm quite active in that whenever I can. And I consider that consciousness raising on a larger scale.
Of course it is.
It is that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all I can say. I give money to all the organizations that I can afford to. I am one of the active Raging Grannies. I still teach whenever I can, which sometimes might be too much even for people whom I'm trying to teach. I mean, I'm not talking about my German discussion group, but even there sometimes I overdo it a little bit. Well, raised, born and bred humanists who are not really very well organized, so forth. That's all I can say, and I guess I'll continue to do that. And in my writing, too, I mean, even in my academic writing, I've never written my dissertation was not one of those strictly academic dissertations, but it had to do with teaching and consciousness raising about racism in mass media. And mass media is one of the fields, of course, that I'm very interested and sometimes involved in, because I think that's the school of the nation, and you have to teach that, teach a lot of humanistic values there. So that's all I can say about myself. And, you know, when students, old students, write to me and thank me for something they've learned, then that makes me feel very good. So
I hope you've had many of those letters.
I've had.
I don't know where my humanist values came from, but I remember having humanist values in high school, and certainly carried on into college. And at that time, I was very interested in the beginning origins of the civil rights movement. I remember picketing Woolworths. What we did in sympathy with what was going on in the South was picket the Woolworths in the North. And and I remember people walking by and people even from the school where I was saying, "What are you doing that for?" You know, and we marched on Washington, we being my husband and I. So that was a big part of something that I really felt that I wanted to be involved in. And then, of course, with the adoption of my son, I began to even more see the world through his eyes and look at the world in, I mean, all kinds of ways that I just hadn't realized before. I mean, I'd look at the Gerber baby food, or I'd look at the cereal aisle. Why don't they have any African-American children there? You know, why is it always so white and pretty and not... so we had a long way to go, and of course, in that area, and of course, we still have a long way to go. And a lot of it was self-education. I didn't know that that I had a lot of racism that I had to work through, because I believe that I believe that almost everyone in America has to work through some racism that they have because we're tainted, and we need to recognize that and work on it. And I worked in a school that was a private school that was devoted to the arts. And as admissions director, I took in a lot of kids who were very talented but very, very eccentric or what have you. And the school that I worked in was kind of a avant-garde school with a lot of experimentation, like longer class sizes. So if you worked with a painting, you didn't go into an hour class, and get out your paints and paint for 15 minutes, and then the teacher says, okay, it's time to put everything away now. And we found that with the two-hour class system, which they called the modular system in my school, you could do a lot more, not only in the arts, but also in things like history, where they set up trials or all kinds of different kinds of work that you could do that needed a longer time than a half an hour or 45 minutes. Anyway, and then I had a daughter with mental illness, and so I had gone in Boston to a couple of meetings of NAMI. When I was divorced and moved out here, I became very involved in NAMI, which is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and I brought a parent-to-parent class, national class, into Dane County, and that is still going on, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful success. I taught the class for a number of years. All of this stuff is volunteer. Then I decided that there was too much emphasis on medication, and although I believe that some very good things have come along through medication, I felt like we weren't helping people, that people needed more than medication to recover. They needed friends, they needed other things to do. You could not sit in an apartment for 24 hours a day, see your social worker once a week, to get the medications for that week. People isolated themselves, and they needed to get out and interact. And I believe in recovery in mental illness. I believe in it because I've seen it happen over and over again. I believe there's terrible stigma that we have to fight. Anyway, I founded My Baby, which is an organization called Cornucopia. And we offer activities, free activities. It's sponsored by United Way. We get our money from United Way for people who need to be together with other people who have similar problems, and they're really doing wonderful things. I'm no longer involved except as my founder, a founder role, but I'm very proud of that organization. And when I was president of NAMI, I would go around giving talks here and there. And so I've devoted a lot of time to those organizations.
You all heard what I said, and I'll just add a little bit of something that she didn't mention that was quite important. I went to a Quaker college. It was very Quaker. Mr. Quakerism was emeritus professor of philosophy. His name was Rufus Jones, and he was still active on the campus. Even the non-Quaker faculty frequently took their sabbatical years overseas managing some Friends Service Committee activity. I was impressed with how this Friends Service Committee managed to leverage their resources. For instance, they wanted to have a school for dropouts from high school in Chicago. And they got it started, and they found out that the majority of their students had worked for McDonald's. And they got McDonald's involved, and McDonald's took it over as if it had been their idea, and they were off the hook, and all they did was get it rolling. And they managed to do an awful lot of that sort of thing. And they did other really imaginative things. During the Cold War, they invited people from our Senate and Duma and other countries who were potential future leaders for long weekends and seminars with the idea that these people had known each other for years before they assumed power, that they would, the world would be a better place. And to top it off, at one point, we got a registered letter from a judge in Chicago, which was an apology from the FBI for having us under surveillance for being opposed to the storm. And apparently the Quakers went to court to get their supporters exonerated, and the judge went along with them. And I think that adds something to what Matty said.
The conversation causes me to remember a specific comment that I received from a teacher in high school. I had been the day before this particular day an honorary student page at the state legislature, which was fun. I enjoyed doing that. And so I had my excuse letter, and you had to hand that to every teacher to deal with why you weren't in class the prior day. Well, I received it back from the teacher with a comment that I'll repeat in a moment. After having refused to go to the hallway to put a book over my head for an atomic bomb test. And so I just sat in the room and refused to participate. And the teacher, after the class was reassembled, German teacher, by the way, handed me back my note and the requirement that I report to the office, saying this and this, the go to the office slip, do not mix. So I was raised in a family of pacifist, socialist, Democrat, labor, mix all of those kinds of things together, and have done my best to continue those traditions. And so what am I doing now? If you will, predominantly economic, although my time is involved in a number of them. Directly in terms of time, I'm heavily involved in Prairie UU Society. I'm treasurer of our neighborhood association and do volunteer work with the retiree chapter of AFT Wisconsin. And economically, as a consumer, we try and be localvores. Wherever possible, I try and do my shopping at a locally owned business rather than a national chain, because I think the direct impact is greater by going that direction. We are season subscribers to two different theater companies in Madison, supporting the arts. We try and buy tickets frequently to live musical performances, predominantly classical. By the way, the Early Music Festival is on this week, and a reminder that's worth going. We don't know whether we'll make it yet, but we haven't really looked at our schedule.
You missed the best one.
Yeah,
yesterday.
It was really good. Yeah.
And
then, in addition to those time commitments, monetary contributions. We are definitely members of the USC, also the Friends Service Committee. We are members of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, the ACLU, Amnesty International, and Planned Parenthood, NARL, National Abortion Rights, whatever the L stands for, and above all, the Southern Poverty Law Center. And each of those gets sizable contributions because we think that making those contributions is important.
Well, my big thing right now is helping with the union. I go to the Solidarity Sing-Along at least 3 times a week. And I help out with the union volunteer work with the recalls whenever possible. But not all of it, because everything they ask for, you'd be exhausted. I donate money to the environmental and the freedom from religion groups. I'll stick with that. Your turn.
Well, for 45 years, I was a devout Roman Catholic, but considered myself a Christian humanist, and was very involved in race relations, fair housing, and so on. Somewhere around 45, I left religious life and went into ethical culture, and was in leadership roles in ethical culture for about 20 years. And the big thing we did was we had the sanctuary movement, and really brought families. And the other thing was mainly in the homeless movement, like in the 70s and 80s, became a leader in the homeless movement. Since I came to Madison, I've been here a year. I'll tell you a funny story first. The first day we arrived in the place where we live, which is a little small 55 plus community of 10 apartments in Whitcomb Drive. The ladies asked my wife if she'd like to join the Widows of Whitcomb.
Oh no! Oh dear.
So I managed to get them to change, they were called the Wows. I managed to get them to change their name from the Widows of Whitcomb to the Women of Whitcomb, and then allowed my wife to join.
I don't even far.
And what we have done actually is, in that particular environment, in terms of occupying time, they have a large community room in that building, which was only used by one gentleman who is an artist, and had taken over the whole place, and we got it to be renovated and fixed up. And so my major accomplishment with the Women of Whitcomb is we have a cocktail hour every Thursday at 5 o'clock, which is very well attended.
Only by women?
No, we've had a few men,
everybody
myself
gets
included. And so that's going very well. For 30 years, I was in the aging business. I was a trainer in aging, Medicare, Social Security, and trained a lot of social workers and human service workers. So I trained a lot. I worked for the state of New Jersey for a while, training ombudsmen, volunteer ombudsmen. So when we moved to Madison last year, we decided that we would become ombudsmen. So my wife, Sidel, and I are ombudsmen for the last 10 months or so at Capitol Lakes. So in terms of spending time, we spend at least 2 hours each at Capitol Lakes. And we have been particularly pushing for a greater participation of the people who are in the nursing home in the cultural and social life of Capitol Lakes itself, which of course is first class. There's music almost every day, especially when the young people from the University School of Music are putting on their little recitals, and there are many cultural shows. So we have been pushing that with some success, because a lot of people feel that just because you're in a nursing home, you're brain dead, but that's not the case. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people with dementia, but there are a lot of people without dementia, but who have other frailties or other illnesses. So in terms of our time, that's a major effort. And the third thing I'll mention is that I'm a strong believer in continuing education. So we joined Plato. I'm sure most of you are familiar with Plato. And so I'm now on the board of Plato. And I'll be teaching, team teaching, at least one course on Plato. And trying to move, will be in time, seeking to get Plato to reach out a little bit more from West Madison to East Madison, perhaps to South Madison, to expand its role. And it's a really a wonderful organization, but to expand its role in terms of some of the other members of Madison community at large. So that's kind of like our own agenda.
Well, let's see, Al's comment reminded me of my first activism when I was in high school. That it was back in the day when they still read the Bible every morning, and which was quite legal at the time. And when it came to my turn, I went to the teacher and said, I'm not going to do that. I said, and I showed her in the Bible where it says that you should pray in your closet. The Pharisees were the ones that prayed in public, and that was not good. And so she let me skip me. And in the end, pretty shortly after that, she stopped requiring the Bible readings. I'd like to think that I had some influence on that as a kid. Of course, early after college in Chicago, spent a lot of time marching, for civil rights, and then later on for anti-war things. But currently, I do an awful lot with music, so I'm in the Raging Grannies, and thanks to Rose Marie, I lead the Raging Grannies when I'm there, because she said, they need help. I made it through, but I said, well, Rosemary, I can't just go and take over leading. And she said, yes, you can.
Yeah.
So, but I said, well, I'll go to a rehearsal. Well, about halfway through the first rehearsal, I couldn't stand it anymore. But we have, of course, greatly expanded since then. I mean, I think we must have close to 50 members now. It's very exciting because of all the work that people have done on the square. People hear us and say, how do I get to be a Raging Granny? I just recruited another one at the Capitol Sing on Thursday. I ran into an old friend. I said, you need to be a Raging Granny. So she took my name, and she's going to call me. So that was cool. Of course, I spend a huge amount of my time for Prairie. Being president is kind of equivalent to maybe a quarter-time job, especially if you kind count in leading the choir. So that really the bulk of my volunteer work currently is split between Prairie and the Raging Grannies. So one is more my religious core aspect, and the other is more my political hat. And then I also volunteer at Olbrich with my gardening hat.
And you didn't take over the Grannies, they took you over. They really took over immediately.
I think you'd be interested in hearing some of the different venues the Raging Grannies do, like Lanterns for Peace.
Oh, yeah, I think Lanterns for Peace was first thing I ever did.
Yeah,
and then, of course, the Grannies, as total, have spent a huge amount of time on the Capitol this last bit. We've sung for the homeless women.
What's the name? Salvation Army?
Salvation Army.
Yeah, we're doing this again in a couple
right,
of weeks.
Right, in a couple weeks. We sang for the, there's an annual volunteer day. We sang for that, and we've been asked to do that again.
Fighting Bob,
right. We've done Fighting Bob regularly for quite a number of years. Yeah. That's one of our really
That's going to be down here this year.
I know.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, they've outgrown. Yeah.
I mean, the Fairgrounds?
They've outgrown Bear Bows Fairgrounds, yeah. Right.
Cool.
Where else have we gone, Rosemary?
Some Spanish singing.
Oh, that's true. We sang in Spanish on the steps of the courthouse on the same day that the demonstrations were happening in Arizona, and they were encouraging demonstrations all around the country. So there was a Hispanic group that was at demonstrating on the steps of the courthouse, and we joined them and sang
and then,
in Spanish.
And the Madison Area Peace Coalition, right. The Wisconsin Coalition for Peace and Justice.
Network for Peace and Justice,
and
we sang
one last,
for them.
2 years ago, we went to visit all the major politicians in the State House who had their offices, and we went to their offices, and we left some notes with them and sang there in the office. I mean, we're invited.
And we sang
more
in the,
and more
on the, the group, representatives of the group sing in the farmer's market every other week.
And so, Feingold's office.
Feingold's office.
Feingold's,
yeah.
Tammy Baldwin.
Yeah.
Robert Wander.
Cole.
Instruments.
Yeah, we should.
We've got three more people.
Yes, we should go. Okay, keep going.
We're kind of recent to Wisconsin, but when we were back in Lafayette, I was heavily involved in neighborhood issues and on the board of Lafayette Neighborhood Housing Services, who worked hard to improve transitional neighborhoods and to provide housing, responsible home ownership. Mm-hmm. I might say that our loans were paid back. We had a really better record than most. I was on the board of Transitional Housing, which was helped, in particular, single mothers from abusive situations get on their feet and get jobs and get housing. I was a precinct committeeman for a lot of years, and in Indiana, that's a little different than here. I mean, it's an elected position, and we don't have same-day registration, so the main duty of a precinct committeeman is to go door-to-door in your precinct and register folks, and I've registered hundreds of folks in Indiana. We were both involved in environmental issues, and I'll let Bill tell you about that, but since we've been in Wisconsin, we've been involved mostly with the natural step. That's a group of people trying to work for sustainable issues. And I've taken it personal, and like Al, I try to be the local war. And also down to things like I'm on a tear about plastic. You know, if I have a choice between a plastic bottle of salad dressing and a glass one, I get the glass one. I got little mesh bags for all of my produce, so I don't have to have any of those little plastic bags on the roll in the stores, and I do the CSA thing, and what plastic we do get, I'm very conscientious about recycling all I can of it or reusing it. I actually wash out plastic bags and hang them up to dry.
Yeah,
and And for a while we were facilitators for people taking the Natural Step course.
Yeah. Long ago in Indiana.
Sounds like a song.
Yeah, I think that was a song like that. The first time I thought I was a humanist, I guess, was when I became an environmentalist and decided to fight the Corps of Engineers. That was a good way to spend 10 or 15 years of our lives. But we won. And a small creek in Warren County is still flowing free. Last I looked, anyway. somehow that seemed a humanistic thing to me. And I guess it's because it stands in opposition to the Lutheran way I was raised up, which was to think of the natural environment as kind of something to be subjugated and dominated. And one of the lessons I learned somewhere along the line is the burden of knowledge. When you know something is happening, You have to do something about it, or else you're complicit in it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like this program this morning, I wish I hadn't heard that, because knowing that
the School of America, yeah.
Knowing that there's so much, yeah, that stuff like the School of the Americas and domestic violence and violence against children. Knowing that it's happening and not doing something about it is just standing in agreement with it. It's a powerful knowledge, but it's also a convicting knowledge. It tells you you can never do enough, and yet you have to try. I guess a similar chain of logic led to my involvement with the Mental Health Association. I didn't get involved with NAMI because it wasn't available at the time, but the Mental Health Association in Tippecanoe County was a cause that I supported and served on the board and served as a volunteer. And one of our projects was a homeless shelter, which was greatly needed, but and somewhat abused by the participants. But I mean, you know, I don't think we could have done it in a way that wouldn't have been subject to the possibility of abuse, and still allowed for the possibility of non-abuse. I mean, people need to be trusted. And even if they're not completely trustworthy, it's an exercise that's worth doing to trust people and let them make mistakes.
Can I say something to what you just said about, sure, you know you don't have a chance, or it's almost impossible, but you have to. If you know something, you have to do something. Right. We had a wonderful saying in German, du hast keine Chance, also nutze sie. And translated, that means you don't have a chance, therefore use it. It sounds, you know, but this is the sort of thing that I think I live by, you know, even though you know it's probably not going to work, but you have to live as if it might work. You know, that's, to me, is humanism.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, be the change. Be the change, really.
And a lot of times it does.
I was just reminding Warren that we were talking earlier this morning about secondary impacts, and he had a student who would have dropped out if it hadn't been for him, and he took her on as a PhD student, and she came as a young woman from India, and she had majored in home economics, I believe, before she ended up in was it sociology or was it educational policy studies? I can't remember. Okay. And she ended up with a PhD in educational policy studies, ended up as the South Asian director for UNICEF, right?
Well,
oh, wow.
After Save the Children.
Oh, she was Save the Children first.
That was first.
And then ended up at UNICEF. Ended up at the time dealing with Marcos, at the time that cane sugar or beet corn sugar, corn syrup took over the soda industry, and the people in the Philippines were dying because they didn't have because they didn't have any more work because they weren't selling cane sugar, and so she saw that children were dying. She documented it with using some of the skills she'd learned through her professors in social and the UW. Went to talk to Marcos and convinced him to give her money to set up health and nutrition clinics in various parts of the Philippines. And ended up being known worldwide for some of the work that she did. And in more recent years, got an honorary doctorate here at UW. Mm. Now this was a student who would, I think if it hadn't been for one man, would have dropped out of the UW. And I just want quickly to sneak in that I have probably played music in most of the organizations that were mentioned here in terms of... And I do this in honor of George Calderon, and Ruth, who isn't here today, but including Capitol Lakes and a number of nonprofit organizations.
I think where it really hits is if you go to a place like India and you have humanitarian things, and these things constantly just throw themselves in your face.
Yeah.
And what do you do? Mm-hmm. And I think that finally, at least with me, my mind just said, I just can't, I'll just die in this swamp if I do this. I just got to stay away. I got to put it between myself and I got to
build
a barrier.
And do what you can do.
And we all did. Nobody in that company ever left because they couldn't stand this.
Yeah.
And yet you're faced with it. I mean, you drive to work and here's a leper that climbs up on your hood and puts his hands up there, you know. And these sort of things just come up all the time, and eventually you have to harden your heart, but not harden it.
Yeah.
Harden it somehow. And I've told people who ask me in Indians, I said, if I do these things, then I can't stay here.
Yeah.
And I can't because I can't stand it. So
yeah.
You just, but it really, even in New York City, you see, you try to teach your children, you know, and here's somebody laying on the sidewalk. Or suppose somebody falls down and somebody's supposed to give them mouth to mouth. Well, who, me? And right away, I started looking for excuses. And I said, well, not me. There's other people. They should do it. Why aren't they doing it? And I especially in foreign countries, I think, well, you know, it's there. They're citizens. They're all right there. Why me?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the one, and I keep making excuses, and then I hate myself for it.
Why you? Because you know how, and you can.
Oh, yeah, but I don't.
Yeah. There's one thing I would like to throw in. When I was living in Germany in the 70s and 80s, I belonged to one organization, the German American Peace Network. And we worked together with a lot of church people, German and American pastors, and we demonstrated in front of the embassy during Reagan's regime.
Oh, yeah.
And we had an alternative 4th of July in the middle of Frankfurt to show we are the other American. I think, the most patriotic thing that we did, because we got lots and lots of brochures and publications about draft resistors and about, you know, oppositional things. And we had, all day long, we had Germans come to our stand in the middle of Frankfurt and saying they were so glad that we were doing that, and that there isn't just that one commercial Ronald Reagan type of America. So we were very patriotic in our very oppositional way, because that's one of the American good things, the opposition. I mean, that's what we're built on.
Right.
So that was cool.
We made it around the circle and used up our hour, so thank you all for participating.
Thank you.
We learned a lot.
This is very interesting.
Yeah.